from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, the delicious revolution. Alice Waters had no formal restaurant experience back in 1971 when she opened Chez Panisse in Berkeley. Since then, her emphasis on fresh, local, and organic food has clearly had a huge influence on cooks, restaurants, school cafeterias, even on First Lady Michelle Obama. As the 40th anniversary of Chez Panisse approaches, we'll talk with Alice Waters and discuss her influence, her advocacy, and why some say her philosophy is elitist. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Well, mention the name Chez Panisse in Bay Area foodie circles, and you're likely to elicit smiles of appreciation and gratitude, perhaps among other things. And Alice Waters opened her restaurant on August 28, 1971. And today, 40 years later, Waters has clearly left her mark, changing the conversation about where our food comes from, how it's prepared, and what can be done to make the American diet more healthy, especially for kids. And so this hour, we're going to take a look back at how Alice Waters helped create California cuisine, and we begin at the source with Alice Waters. Alice, welcome to Forum.
Thank you.
Well, you began your restaurant, of course, 40 years ago, and take us back to that time. What did you set out to do when you opened the doors?
Well, I was just trying to have a neighborhood restaurant for my friends. I lived in that area of Berkeley, in North Berkeley, and I had friends who loved to cook, and I thought, well, maybe I could make a living if I opened a little place and my friends had to pay for a meal instead of just coming to my house and eating it.
And you opened up the downstairs restaurant first?
I did. We had a fixed price menu from the very beginning, and the idea was a little bit that we didn't know how to do an a la carte menu, and that it would be easier if we just served a meal like the kind that you would have at home. And so it began that way, and it's still that way, believe it or not. 40 years later.
Now, 1971, if you think back to what was going on in the Bay Area then, and in Berkeley in particular, very politically active, the anti-war protests going on, how did that influence what you were trying to do with Chez Panisse, if at all?
Well, it did. It really influenced me because I was on the fringes of the free speech movement and really believed that we could sort of change the world, and that if we had a business, that people who were like-minded would come to it, would really support us. And I opened the restaurant with a group of friends with that feeling that we didn't have to kind of buy into the corporate world, that we could somehow do this as part of a counterculture protest. And it was never intended to be anything other than a place to gather.
So it was kind of a protest in a way against what, like fast food or chain restaurants?
Absolutely. Tasteless food and kind of that anonymous restaurant. This was going to be a place where friends met, and the cooks came out from the dining room, from the kitchen, and had a conversation. It wasn't meant to be something that was fancy like the French restaurants of the time.
And when you say you wanted to change the world, I mean, did you think from the beginning you were going to change it, you know, bite by bite?
Well, no, I never imagined that, but I think we were pretty effective in stopping the war.
Stopping the war at
the time as a movement across the country, and I just felt like you needed to really live the way that it demonstrated to other people a set of values that were more important than than going out to try to make a lot of money. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I thought, well, if it's tasty enough, people will want to come and I'll make a living. But I never thought about a sort of career as a restaurateur.
Yeah. And did you ever think of opening another one? I mean, yours is somewhat unique in that, there's the Upstairs Cafe, which opened in 1980, I think. But
yes.
Yeah. So, but you've never branched out outside that building, really, other than with your advocacy. Did you give thought to that?
I just felt like it's so difficult to keep the restaurant alive and right, and I just couldn't imagine opening another one. Plus, I like to be in a place and not sort of traveling from one place to another. I really consider it kind of my home away from home. So I wanted to do that. I wanted to be there with my friends and to be cooking or in the dining room and engaged in that way.
I remember a few years ago that you were, I think, and I might be getting some of the details wrong, but you were invited by the Louvre to potentially open a restaurant there. And you went over and scoped it out and basically decided that the French weren't up to the standards that you wanted to keep and that they wanted to use frozen food and that kind of thing. Tell us about that and whether you have any regrets about it.
Well, I was very honored to be asked to think about doing a concession at the Louvre. And at first, I thought it was going to be really integrated with the sort of art decorative wing of the museum. And I was very interested in some kind of collaborative project. But when they finally gave me the contract, it was for a fast food restaurant down below the pyramid, and I just couldn't accept it.
Were they shocked when you said no?
Well, I think it's very hard to say. There was the sort of business wing and the creative wing, and I felt like they didn't have much conversation. And sadly, it didn't happen, because I do think it's important to make this case for real food and to support the farmers. And you could have done something extraordinary in the center of Paris.
Well, you are known, of course, for having high standards, being strong-willed, something of a perfectionist. And I'm wondering if you ever had to compromise those standards at all in running the restaurant.
Well, I'd like to say that I haven't, but surely I have. Never in terms of olive oil.
You draw the line at olive oil.
Never in terms of olive oil. And never in terms of sort of trying to accommodate people. Like, there's always room for one more. There's always enough food. I've hoped that that sort of sense of hospitality would bring people back and make them feel at home.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring in one of the things you're so well known for is having hired and trained a lot of chefs that went off to do great things. And two of them are here with us this morning, and I want to invite them to join us. Charlie Halliwell is the chef and owner of Pizzaiolo and Boot and Shoe Service over in Oakland, and I know he worked at Chez Panisse for 8 years. Charlie, good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
Also with us, Russ Moore, who's the chef and owner of Camino Restaurant in Oakland, and you worked there for more than 20 years. What's it like to work for Alice Waters?
Oh, it's kind of crazy. Hi, Alice.
I think I better hang up.
It's crazy and good. I mean, here's a person who really has a vision for what she wants, and your job is to help implement that vision as best you can. And you have a lot of room to work, and you can buy the best stuff, you can hire the best people, you can work as hard as you want to work, and make beautiful things all day long. So it's kind of a great job. And it was a really good lead-in to having my own restaurant, you know.
Any conflicts?
Friendly
conflicts.
Oh, yeah, lots of conflicts. Alice and I are both strong-willed people, and, you know, talking about the Louvre project, I had a lot of opinions about that, or the Rome project, or different dinners, you know, or collaborating with Alice on the menu for the Dalai Lama. There's always, like, we all feel passionate about what we're doing. But I think that's good.
And Charlie Halliwell, Quick thoughts from you about Alice before we let her go.
Oh, yeah. I got hired at Chez Panisse when I was 21 by Russ, actually. And
it's also incestuous.
Yeah, it was. Working for Alice is amazing. I've never worked with somebody with more integrity when it comes to really focusing on a vision and staying within the parameters of a vision. And it was really inspiring as a young man to be surrounded by that. Russ and Cal and Gilbert and all the people who ran the kitchen when I was there at the beginning were amazing. They worked so hard and they were so dedicated to really manifesting Alice's vision all the time that it was an amazing place to learn.
Well, Alice Waters, we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about you. But we really want to thank you for joining us. How are you going to celebrate your 40th?
Oh, well, with many, many benefit dinners and lots of friends. I just feel so lucky that so many wonderful people are involved in this big vision, and I'm just feeling in a very grateful place.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and congratulations to you for making it this long and having such a big impact.
See you next week, Alice.
Bye-bye. And also joining us this hour, Michael Bauer, who's executive food and wine editor, restaurant critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. Michael, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Do you remember the first time you ate at Chez Panisse, Michael?
I do. It was before I actually lived in San Francisco. I've been here 25 years.
What do you remember about it?
I just remember that it was a very sweet, quaint restaurant, that it was like no other restaurant. It really wasn't a restaurant. It was like being in someone's living room. I don't remember exactly what I had. It was probably 30-some years ago, but I just remember the feeling, kind of the feeling of camaraderie with everyone else in the kitchen, because the kitchen is right there near the dining room. And at the time, I believe I was living in Dallas, so it was a very different culture. And so to come over there, taking a taxi from San Francisco over there, it was obviously a trek to get there, and it was well worth it.
A lot of people, of course, have eaten there who are listening today, but many have not. Describe the essence of Chez Panisse, downstairs and upstairs, because they're different.
I think the essence of Chez Panisse, it's simple, but it's almost intellectual. I mean, I think that you have to really love and appreciate food and know food before you really get it, because the dishes are very singular and focused. But I've never been there in the dozens of times I've been there where there hasn't been at least one ingredient or something that you go, wow, this is what pork is supposed to taste like, or this is what asparagus is supposed to taste like, or the famous peach on a plate. I mean, and you can't discount that. I think people do, and I think they like to laugh about it and make fun of it, but you really can't discount it because it's been very important.
Russ Moore, you worked there for more than 20 years. What period of time was it?
Well, I opened Camino 3 years ago, so... And I had a year off before we opened the restaurant, so that's the time span.
Yeah, and so
I'm bad with dates.
Okay, so how do you think the food changed during the time you were there?
Huh? Interesting. We got better produce in the time I was there. The organic, sustainable, local mantra wasn't as big a deal in the beginning, and when I was there, that was 20 years ago. We got better and better farmers, and it became more and more clear we could get all the produce from nearby, and it could all be organic, and it could all be perfect and wonderful. And it was one of my jobs to buy the produce. Still one of my favorite jobs at my restaurant now. But I think the produce got better and better and better, and it enabled us to do even simpler things that worked really well. When we visited different countries with the menu a little bit here and there, because it used to be mostly Provençal. Then it was Spanish and Italian with Paul Bertoli coming in. Every chef that came in kind of brought their own taste or flavor, and they're allowed to do that within the confines of what's allowed at Chez Panisse.
Charlie, do you agree with Michael that you have to really get food or appreciate food in a certain way or know about food to really fully get what Alice Waters does over there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I didn't have a super foodie upbringing, but I remember really clearly going to Chez Panisse, and it was a revelation to me. I mean, it was – and I didn't know – I mean, I grew up eating Chef Boyardee ravioli and TV dinners, but – which, I still have a place in my heart for that.
Apple Betty.
Yeah, yeah. But I it was a revelation to me. It didn't take me long to really understand how amazing the actual ingredients that they were using were there, and that really the – I mean, after 8 years of being there, I do feel like really what I try to do is – I try to get the best stuff and not mess it up.
Michael Bauer, you review all kinds of restaurants throughout the Bay Area. What do you think are the most important influences, other than ingredients, which I think we probably would all agree upon, that Alice Waters and Chez Panisse have had?
I think, obviously, it's the ingredients. I think that's what's led to kind of our priding ingredients over technique. East Coast is more technique-driven. We're more ingredient-driven. And to me, that's been the big legacy. But I think also what you have to give Alice credit for is her singular vision. I mean, other chefs in her position have basically expanded their empire and made more money. She is not. Her vision has gone into kind of politics. So she's kind of extending what she talked about earlier, which is having a vision. And the restaurant has become the platform for that vision, for now the sustainable and working with farmers and the edible schoolyard.
I'll throw this out to any of you guys. Yeah. Charlie, you want to say something? Well,
I just think that it's so important to remember that what is happening in the food world now is nothing new. I mean, people have been cooking food for a long time and cooking really delicious food, and that somehow we came through a period in American history, especially where we kind of traded in home-cooked meals for pre-packaged food. I mean, it's kind of like we traded in the barbershop for plastic disposable razors, and we traded in homemade pancakes for pancake mix. Like, we got duped out of all this amazing stuff for about 50 years. And Alice just said, hey, remember this, which I think is why she has this political agenda. She wants us to remember a time that has to do with service and that has to do with being a production-oriented people instead of a consumption-oriented people. So when you go to Chez Panisse, I feel like you get to see the kitchen. You get to see the cooks. You get to feel this intimate service. And it's really about being part of a production, not just being a consumer who's getting what you want, but you're in someone's home and you're a guest in their home and you get to participate in this larger project that's about producing an experience.
Michael, I seem to remember you saying, and even a moment ago, you referred to asparagus. And, you know, but there's something special, no matter how many times you've had asparagus, having it at Chez Panisse or restaurants that follow her philosophy. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And I remember talking to Thomas Keller not that long ago, who said even at his stature and having 2 3-star restaurants in you know, Northern California and New York, he still can't get as good a products as Chez Panisse. Because she's worked so long with the farmers.
And so Russ Moore, you feel like even though you worked at Chez Panisse, you know the same growers, that somehow she gets the cream of the crop, she gets the best stuff?
I think I get a pretty good – I feel like I was relentless at Chez Panisse. I took on that job at managing relationships with farmers and meeting farmers and learning about produce, and I haven't stopped. For me, I mean, you'd have to – we both eat at all the other restaurants around town and at Chez Panisse, but I feel like I'm doing pretty good with my vegetable suppliers and meat suppliers these days.
Charlie.
It's a little friendly competition between Cal and Beth over at Chez Panisse, who buy the vegetables now, and me a little bit.
Yeah. Charlie?
Well, I mean, it just speaks to the legacy of what Alice has done. Alice didn't go out and start a whole bunch more restaurants, but – I mean, think about all of us who are kind of the agents of her. I mean, I feel like Russ trained me. David Tanis trained Russ. There is this amazing lineage of cooks who have gone out into the world and who are really carrying the banner for Alice, who is kind of like our liege lord or whatever.
Is there kind of a Kool-Aid, drink the Kool-Aid phenomenon?
Yeah, for
well,
sure.
Where else are you going to work? If you have this job, the chef's job in the cafe, I worked half the week and had the other half the week off. I had 6 weeks off vacation. Plus, I got to use the best stuff in the world. Am I going to take a job in Las Vegas working for someone else? Like, the only thing you can do is open your own restaurant or do your own thing or open an ice cream shop or a store or something like that. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Russ Moore, he's a chef and owner of Camino Restaurant in Oakland. He's with us this hour, along with Charlie Hallowell, chef and owner of Pizzaiolo and Bhutan Shoe Service over in Oakland, along with Michael Bauer from the San Francisco Chronicle. If you'd like to join us, give us a call. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We'd love to hear from you if you've been to Chez Panisse or if you worked there or own another restaurant and you know, feel that you've been influenced in one way or another, for better or worse, or give us a email, send us your thoughts to forum@kqed.org. Is there any way in which, Charlie Howell, that, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, the big influence that Alice Waters has had, is stifling at all on the restaurant scene?
You know, I hear that a lot. I think that there – so this goes back to my – I don't buy much into anybody doing anything new in the world by and large. I mean, every once in a while there is this like a major paradigm shift and somebody comes up with some new idea that nobody's thought of before. But I think that's a miraculous event. And I think in the food world, it's especially miraculous. So when I go to you know, I won't name any names, but I went to a restaurant recently where somebody was making olives, you know, where they take the olive essence and they put it in some compound that makes it form
and they make it look like an olive.
Yeah, and they make it look like an olive, da, 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 and all this stuff. And really, at the end of the day, I just want an olive. I mean, give me an olive. Give me a delicious, perfect olive. And it's so much better than any olive that you can create that's like the essence of the olive. I mean, the olive is an olive. It's amazing. It doesn't get any better than that. So I do feel like we need to be creative and we need to put – we need to distill some essence of ourselves into what we're doing and into the service that we're doing. But I don't feel like Chez Panisse has stifled creativity. I feel like Alice is trying to cook dinner for people and to serve people. And that's different than a lot of the new cuisine that is a production, where people come and they're almost paying for a show and an experience. They're not really coming for dinner. They're coming for a show. And Alice isn't putting on a show. She's serving dinner.
Michael Bauer, what do you think? Creativity.
I think that's true. I think there are kind of two styles. There is what Alice Waters and what Russ and Charlie are doing, which are cooking dinner at a very high level. And then there's what you'll get at L'Atelier Crin or some of the other restaurants, which is more the chef is artist. And so all of these fancy things on a plate, you don't really go just for the food, you go to see what this chef is doing. So it's two different lineages, I think.
Why does that happen, do you think? Is it because the food has gotten as good as it can be in terms of the ingredients and the freshness and the preparation, so you have to do something, you have to take it to another level by combining things that have never been combined before or deconstructing it?
Yeah, people are always looking for something new. And I think that the dining audience is hungry for that.
What do you think, Russ?
I think it's good that there's new things. I think that for a long period of time in the Bay Area, most restaurants that opened kind of had a Chez Panisse-esque menu. And I was bored with it. And I'm bored with it. I'm bored with it now sometimes because it's really hard to pull that off. And, you know, I know at my restaurant, I try to make my food a little bit different and I'm moving in a different direction. But I like when, you know, James at Comey buys the same vegetables that I buy at the farmer's market and he turns them into something completely different. It's not necessarily how I want to eat all the time, but I think we're getting to a place like we did with Nouvelle Cuisine where the good stuff is filtering out and there's really good restaurants with modern technique. And a lot of the ones that are just smoke and mirrors, literally smoke and mirrors, are not going to be as popular and they're going to go away. But I think it's an exciting food time and there's room for everything right now.
All right. We've got much more to talk about this hour. We're talking about Chez Panisse at 40, the influence of Alice Waters and her restaurant. Give us a call if you'd like to join the conversation, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org or go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kqedforum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. Much more to talk about. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today, and we're talking this hour about Chez Panisse at 40, the influence of Alice Waters and the Berkeley Restaurant. With us here in the studio, Michael Bauer, executive food and wine editor, food critic, restaurant critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. Also, Charlie Hallowell, he's the chef of Pizza Iolo and the Boot and Shoe Service Restaurant in Oakland. I don't know why I have a hard time with that, Charlie. Sorry, saying it, that is. He worked at Chez Panisse for 8 years. And Russ Moore, a Chez Panisse alum of more than 20 years. He owns Camino Restaurant in Oakland. Let's go to the phones and hear what Cecile in Berkeley has to say. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Okay. So the first time time I went to Chez Panisse, I was living in New Mexico for 20 years, and it would be such a treat to come to Berkeley and visit a friend. And I remember distinctly the temperature of a poached salmon, which was room temperature. It was so perfect, and it was so sort of simple and shocking to get something that just made me so aware of quality, taste, and, again, temperature. So what I admire about Alice Waters is that, number one, she created a total environment with her wonderful posters of the César films from France. And what I love about Camino is that the aesthetics are so pleasing. And I would probably go to Pizzaiola much more if it wasn't so noisy. Because I really
all those damn customers.
And that trend and the overkill of foams and this new movement, I find kind of obscene in a time of war and a time of, poverty.
A lot of people struggling, sure.
Recession and so forth.
Yeah.
So I just love the simplicity. And some people don't get it. It is true. I've taken out-of-town guests, and they wonder, what's Alice doing? And to me, once a year for my birthday, I have 2.5 hours with a good friend. I always feel treated like a queen. And I just think it's a marvelous addition. And I wanted Alice to mentor me because I wanted her to show me how I could introduce art. I've had an art gallery for 18 years.
All right. Cecile, thanks for the call. Russ Moore, what she's referring to there, the temperature of the salmon. I mean, that's the kind of thing. Those things don't just happen, do they, at Chez Panisse?
No, I mean, what's great. I mean,
every little detail is controlled in terms of how long things take to get to the table.
Well, it's an intellectual process for much of the day, and then you actually try it, and then everyone weighs in. It's the funniest time when everyone's tasting the food. Alice weighs in, you weigh in. Whoever happens to be walking by tastes the food. And whatever the best idea is what wins out. And with a lot of smart people in the room all the time for your whole life working in a restaurant, you learn how to cook.
When you say people are sort of up to the last minute, the people are deciding, what are they deciding at that point?
The last minute, I'm sure it's the same at Charlie's Restaurant. It's the same at Camino as well. Yeah. You're deciding what temperature the salmon's going to be or how cooked it's going to be or whether it would be better on the grill or poached or baked.
But the other thing that I think that maybe Russ or Charlie could talk to is kind of the whole civilized environment of even working there. I mean,
right.
What other restaurant do you know where the chefs and cooks and everyone sit down and actually have dinner together? In the middle of service.
Yeah. Well, in the middle. It's amazing. I mean, and beyond that, what other restaurant? I mean, I just feel like we have more interesting conversations about the books we're reading and the music we love and all kind of in the nest of talking about food as a major component of culture in general. And the thing that we have, you know, it's a major component of culture and we have to eat every day or we die. So it's this.
When I started, I felt like I didn't know a thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I've never been to a real restaurant. I'm half Korean and I was raised with Asian food. I walked into Chez Panisse and we're sitting down for staff meal. We're drinking wine. Someone mentions it might be corked. I never heard that term before. I didn't know what anything was. And after a period of time, you learn so much. You can talk about art. You can talk about the New York Times article. And it sounds all silly to real restaurants. But man, people know how to cook there. They really, really know how to cook. And it's smart people stay there for a long time. I mean, David Tanis is now leaving after 30 years. And, yeah. You know, that's amazing amount of time for a guy who's eccentric and fun and nutty as David and smart that he's been there that long.
Is there, Michael Bauer, an element of, as the last caller kind of alluded to, of elitism in what she does there, what she advocates in terms of organic food, all that?
Well, I mean, I guess you could call it elitism if you want to because it is not – she talked about war and all of that. Well, I mean, it's not cheap to go to Chez Panisse, but it costs. So I guess you could say it's elite in that regard, but I think it's also wanting to be very inclusive. I know that Alice sometimes they'll say she's unrealistic about wanting, you know, organic food in schools and things like that. But someone has to kind of beat that drum so that you can see it really isn't impossible. You can do it and you can find ways to do it. And I think that's what Chez Panisse represents.
Charlie, what do you think?
You know, I think it's an unbelievably complicated issue. I think that Chez Panisse is definitely a bourgeois establishment. I mean, there's no way around that. And – Alice's objective isn't to be feeding the proletariat. I mean, I think that she would like to do that. And I feel like, you know, I am maybe one step down the ladder in terms of egalitarian access, but not very far down the ladder. And maybe somebody will leave my restaurant and go start a rice and beans place that's all organic. I mean, to be able to do a place that is truly egalitarian, especially in Oakland, would be very hard, but a really righteous project.
Michael Bauer, to what extent are the ethics, the philosophy of Chez Panisse trickling, I don't say trickling down, but impacting less expensive restaurants?
Oh, I think it's had a huge effect, especially in San Francisco. It's like you almost don't put on your menu anymore that something is organic, sustainably grown, because it's just almost a given. Mm. And I'm talking about the upper end restaurants.
Yeah. What about more, you know, burger places, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I think it's even had an impact there. I think it's had an impact all the way down, probably even down to McDonald's.
Hmm. All right. Back to the phones. Another call from Berkeley. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Charlie. Hey, Russ. This is Steve Sullivan.
Hi, Steve.
Who's Steve Hi. Sullivan? Come on.
He owns Acme Bread.
Oh, Acme Bread. Awesome. Okay. Welcome.
So I wanted to refine one point that Michael Bauer made and make another point. First, on the matter of food knowledge and kind of needing to get it, I want to make sure people understand that it's not a refined, esoteric food knowledge that people need to have. My father-in-law was a farmer, wouldn't have been caught dead in a fancy restaurant, and when he could still get around, he would come a couple times a year to the restaurant. And it was like a revelation to him. It reminded him of the food that he got in his mother's home. That reminded him of the food he got in his orchards. So it's not a, you know, an intellectual practice you need to master to appreciate the food at Chez Panisse.
Charlie Halwa, comes back to what you were saying earlier, that it's really about, in a sense, hearkening back to a time when we were producing our own food, picking our own food, making our own food.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the other point I wanted to make is I think one of the things that Chez Panisse introduced that hadn't been mentioned yet is this notion that a top restaurant could be something other than an elaborate, fancy place. I started working at Chez Panisse in 1975, and the top restaurants were places like L'Orangerie, which had dining rooms surrounded by artificial tangerine trees, and La Borgogna, you know, these very elegant places, and imitations of elegance. And it wasn't until Chez Panisse kind of broke the mold and cross-fertilized between restaurant types, people really saw the possibility that a very top restaurant could be, you know, something casual and something for the family and something embracing.
Yeah. Michael Bauer, do you feel like Chez Panisse is a casual place?
I think in what Steve was saying, in that time period it is. I mean, now there are a lot more casual places doing food like that. But I think the point he did make when I said it was an intellectual, I think what I meant is that you have to have almost an emotional connection, a deep connection with food before you understand it, before you can really – because you have to stop and pay attention to the food and know that that asparagus is so good.
Yeah, and it's had an huge influence on bread as well, right? I mean, Acme obviously is now huge. Very huge impact, Charlie.
Yeah. I mean, Acme bread is like – you know, I love bread, but – Steve Sullivan has changed the way we think of mass-produced bread. And I mean, it's not hugely mass-produced, but the quality of bread that they're able to put out for the amount of bread they put out is absolutely amazing.
With organic flour pretty early on.
Yeah. And now they're using some who are they doing it for? All California-grown wheat. Is that for Alice?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's a special loaf. Sort of in the spirit of the edible schoolyard and to celebrate Chez Panisse's 40th, our miller found some California wheat that just had incredible flavor that also was much stronger than California wheat normally is, and he tried stone milling it on his little personal mill, and it just made this incredible flour, and Alice wanted a sort of special whole grain bread, and we worked on it for months at the bakery and kind of came up with something that's a little funny shaped, little scorched whole grain loaf that we've just started selling to a few wholesale customers and in our shops.
So you feel it has been the Chez Panisse and, you know, Alice Waters have been good for sort of experimentation or, you know, just trying new things, creativity?
When I started baking bread at the restaurant, I had half a day where I helped with pastry and half a day where I was told to bake whatever bread I wanted, whatever interested me. And Lindsay, the pastry chef, would kind of help me decide what to bake every day. It was months and months of baking before we zeroed in on, you know, what would be the breads for the restaurant. So, I mean, what more, you know, what more field for experimentation could a kid ever be given? You know, here I'm at Chez Panisse restaurant. I'm 21, 22 years old and being told, you know, do whatever you want. Show up at 2 in the morning, buy produce, then come back and bake and bake whatever you want.
Yeah, good. Well, thanks. Thanks for checking in with us. Appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
Thanks. All right, let's go to Laura now in Oakland. Welcome to Forum.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. I'm a huge fan of the program and of your restaurant and of Mr. Bauer's critiquing of business over the years. I just wanted to point out what a huge influence she had going back to the 70s and 80s on other restaurateurs. People like Deborah Madison, who founded Greens, and Mark Miller, who went on to Red Sage. And I believe even Jeremiah Towers was a Chez Panisse grad.
Yes, he
was. I'm
not
sure about that.
Yeah, he was.
And just a quick anecdote about being at the cafe in 2003 with my husband. And the waiter very proudly told us that the restaurant almost did not open for dinner that night because they all had been at a war protest, including Alice, who had been arrested that afternoon.
I think I was in jail that night.
Yeah, I tried to close the restaurant that night.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they were all just so excited and so proud. And you talk about her ethos, and she really lives her values. And, yeah, I'm a huge fan.
All right. Thanks.
Of all of you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for checking in. Russ Moore, you were talking earlier about how there's always this big discussion among the staff about the details of that night's meal. Is it sort of like Abraham Lincoln used to say, you know, everybody gets one vote, but, you know, what I say happens?
Or? Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know who's in charge. People used to say, well, Alice isn't cooking in the kitchen. She doesn't need to cook in the kitchen. Her palate's impeccable and her opinion is quick.
is there a downside to that, though?
Well, if you... No, I don't think there's a downside to that. I mean, it's frustrating during different times because she'll just say she doesn't like something, and sometimes she can't say why she doesn't like it. I'm in that position a lot myself, so I'm sympathetic toward it.
Can't say because she just can't find the words, or what do you mean?
Sometimes you just don't know why a dish isn't working. You just know it's not working, and then someone has to come up with the idea of how to fix it,
yeah,
or change it, or throw it away and do a whole other dish. Yeah. And the fact that you get to do that is really great.
Yeah, yeah. Michael Bauer... Chez Panisse did have a Michelin star at one point, lost it, and I don't think it's gotten it back. What are your thoughts about that? Why it happened? Does it matter? And the whole, you know, rating system by Michelin?
I don't think it does matter. I think Chez Panisse is still established. Why it happens, I think, would be interesting to know. I mean, you never talk to the Michelin inspectors, but I go there, you know, at least once a year for my top 100 guide, and nothing has changed. I mean, it's still the same food, the same service. And so while all of a sudden they took it away, it would be interesting to know.
Charlie, Russ, what do you make of that whole system?
The Michelin?
Russ? Yeah,
Alice doesn't Russ. Care about the Michelin guide. She never has. It's not. She's never tried to have a 3-star restaurant or follow the rules of the Michelin guide. So it's a funny thing if you look at the list, who gets it and who doesn't get it.
Meaning it's inconsistent and inexplainable sometimes?
It's inexplainable. I haven't eaten at all the restaurants, so I don't really know. I know that Chez Panisse is in its own world, and it's happy being in its own world, and it doesn't have to play with the rest of the restaurants really in that way. So I think it doesn't matter either way.
All right, we got some email here. Robin writes, our lettuces were as segregated as our country, iceberg separated from the frisée, if you could find it. Thanks to Alice, our lettuce is all mixed up with robust reds side by side with crunchy romaine. Robin in Berkeley. That's a good example, though, isn't it? Of the kind of influence that they've had. Also, another email from Kim. People like Alice Waters have influenced how I cook at home. The more I cook, the more disappointed I am when I eat in restaurants. It seems that I have to pay $300 to get a basic, delicious meal. Any comment, she says. Michael Bauer, that's not true, is it?
No, but But it's great that people are cooking. I mean, I think that, that if you're a better cook, you're probably a better diner.
Do you think that – well, I'll ask the chefs here. Do you think that it's – is there something about cooking in a restaurant that makes it either harder or, you know, easier to make a great meal?
No. I mean, so I'll say – I actually have a great answer for this person. I think that first of all, restaurants hardly make any money at all. And to be perfectly honest, we pay less for our food now, or at least a smaller – according to Michael Pollan, a smaller percentage of our income goes to our food than at any other time ever in the history of the world. It's very hard to produce food. So when you go to a restaurant, it might seem expensive, but really it's not that expensive. I mean, if I buy a peach for $1 and I sell it for $4, that's miraculous. Like, I'm doing as good as I can do if I buy a peach for $1 and I sell it for $4.
What do you mean you're doing as well as you can do?
Well, like, if I have a 25% food cost, that's great. But like, Nike makes a pair of sneakers in Southeast Asia for $1.25 and they bring it to America and they sell it for $120. Their markup is a lot better than my markup. And I have to actually do something with that peach that I buy for $1. So I'm paying for labor. I'm paying for a product. You know, food is cheap. And, you know, it does seem expensive to go out to eat. But I'll tell you, cook at home. Cooking at home is the best. Invite people over for dinner. Pop open a bottle of wine. I mean, really, that's what I learned more than anything at Chez Panisse, is like, food is this amazing conduit to interact with the human beings you love and to give something to them and to have this sacred time around the table. Cook at home. If you can cook a delicious meal at home, don't go out to eat.
That's the instructions we give to our line cooks. Yeah. You may be able to work on the line, but can you cook at home and make a dinner? That's really hard. And we try to make our food at Camino like a meal I would make at home.
Yeah.
That's the golden, yeah, that's what we're really looking for. And it's really, really hard to do.
Michael Bauer, you eat out all the time, of course. Do you like to cook? What have you learned about cooking at home from the restaurants you go to?
Well, I mean, I eat out every night. So, and
7 days
lunches.
A week.
Yeah, 7 days a week. So my cooking skills are rusty. I used to cook a lot. And frankly, I wish I could get back to that, because I think having that direct contact with the food is really good if you're a critic. But instead, mine is more of a comparison now of how the food differs, you know, between restaurants that may be serving the same Caesar salad.
Yeah. Is it a disadvantage, Russ and Charlie, to have a critic that doesn't cook, or doesn't it really matter?
Oh, I think he knows what
Russ.
He's doing at this point.
And you have to say it. Since
yeah, I'm sitting right there.
I'll tell you. Can I just say one?
Charlie, go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, really, I worked at Chez Panisse for 8 years, and Russ hired me there, and his co-chef, Gilbert, and then Cal. I learned at least as much about cooking eating at Russ's house and eating at Cal's house and having them come and eat at my house as I ever did working at the restaurant. And I really feel like, because we lost that production-oriented cultural model in our country, where if you go to Europe, almost everybody will say, if you say, what's the best meal you ever had, almost 100% of the time they'll say, a meal my grandma cooked, a meal my grandpa cooked, a meal I had at a festival in the little village where I grew up. No one says, oh, this restaurant meal that I had. And we lost that in America, where almost nobody has that cultural memory. A lot of Latinos have it. A lot of people from the South have it. But at least where I grew up, people, you say, where's your best meal you ever had? They think of a restaurant meal. And if Chez Panisse is functioning as a place that's saying to people, hey, go home and cook. Let us inspire you. But really, when you're a grandma, you want to cook great food for your grandchildren so that they have a memory of food coming out of your hearth. That's your home. That's your love. You know.
Yeah. In terms of other places, and any of you guys can jump in on this, that kind of emphasis, where do you think, what other cities, other than, let's take New York out of it, but other cities where this kind of philosophy is being adapted and, you know, you're seeing it on the tables of restaurants in places that you might not expect?
I mean, you certainly see it in the South, although I don't think they can get the product. I don't think they're quite as far. I think you see it all over the country, but I don't think you see it as concentrated anywhere as you do here in the Bay Area.
Is that because of the access to the food?
The access and the whole culture. I mean, Alice has been doing it 40 years, and all of her disciples have been doing it. And I think that it's created a really savvy dining public.
Yeah. Charlie, there's a lot of cooking shows that encourage people to cook at home, some better than others. But what do you make of the Food Channel and all these other Anthony Bourdain going around?
I haven't had a television for 20 years.
Oh, really?
I
hope you listen to the radio.
I do. I love the radio. I'll tell you, I love Jamie Oliver. I think what he's doing is he is like the real deal, and I really support him. I hope someday I get to meet him. He's somebody that I really admire.
What is it about what he's doing?
I love that he has this political ideology, that he's not just into kind of this television masturbatory cooking show, but that he has an agenda that's about helping people become more connected with the food they eat and where it comes from. I mean, he's definitely in the same vein as Alice in a lot of ways, but otherwise, I'm pretty ignorant of TV stuff.
What about you, Michael? Do you have a TV?
I do, but I don't really
watch the Food Network. Shows.
I think that it has brought a lot of people to food, whether that has a lasting effect. I mean, whether it's going to create better chefs or better cooks, I don't know.
Yeah. What about you, Russ? Do you pay attention to those shows at all?
I also don't have a TV. What I don't, but I have seen some shows. I don't like food competition. That I don't get. What's the hurry? Why does that have to be ready in an hour? I always think if I was on one of those shows, it would take me an hour to make one salad. I'd feel pretty good about it, maybe. That I don't like. I mean, why? What is this kind of macho competition thing?
Top chef kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not what I want to do. I'm not trying to compete with anyone. I'm just trying to make really good food. It's a different way of looking at it. I know it sounds like hippies, but
Berkeley.
None of us have TVs. We just cook all day long.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Lee is on the line. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, great show. Congratulations on your success. My wife and I, we're very fortunate. We're able to eat at Alice's restaurant. We love her food. We love the fine restaurants in San Francisco. But there was a time when, we couldn't. And, the gentlemen on the air are talking about the essence of an asparagus, and I agree. There's nothing like an organic strawberry. It's the most beautiful thing. But they're also expensive, and food is not cheap. I disagree with them. Compared to Nike shoes, of course, but you go to a farmer's market and get an organic, heirloom tomato, it can cost you $1 or $2 or $3. And so I'm just thinking about the people and families who can't afford the good food, the people in the food deserts, the people who can't go to Alice's restaurant. Are there any avenues in which they can get exposed to it? Are there any, I don't know what the word would be, charities, or are there any low-income nights at these restaurants? Or have you ever thought about doing something like that? Because I do agree that there's nothing better than good food, and it is just the most wonderful experience, and I'm fortunate that we can do it. But what about those who can't afford it? Yeah. I was just wondering if there's anything out there for them.
All right. Any thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, there's things like People's Grocery who used to bring a truck to West Oakland where there's no grocery stores, and they'd bring fresh produce, delicious produce for a good price so people could buy it. I think that's the best thing you can do. I mean, eating in a restaurant is one thing. Having produce available and having a culture where that's wanted, that's maybe what's needed.
There's also Michael Bauer. Yeah,
well, it's kind of done with food runners and things where restaurants supply things. So I think it is happening, and I think it is filtering down.
What in terms of farmers? There's a lot of variation among farmers markets. I happen to go to the Alameda Farmers Market last weekend. I sometimes go to the Ferry Building, which is a lot more expensive, probably higher quality also. But in terms of value, any thoughts about what are some of the best value markets or just places to shop, Charlie?
Well, I'll tell you, for me, a lot of it is about what you choose to buy. So farmers markets are expensive, you can't, if I had a really fixed income, or what I encourage people who have really fixed incomes to do is to look at what people all over the world eat, poor people especially. I mean, most of the world is poor, and most of the people in the world don't eat McDonald's and don't eat fast food. And I feel like there is this kind of staple diet that's a vegetarian, whole protein-based meal with some kind of yard green and some kind of sauce. So like everybody all over Italy, people eat carne de povere. They eat, polenta and beans with some greens and some sauce. And in South America, they eat rice and beans. It's all over the world, there's a whole protein vegetarian meal that you eat with some greens. And I feel like that's what most of the people in the world eat. And you can eat.
But how do you make that more interesting?
Well, I think if you get great beans.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, right?
Like it's the sauce.
Russ serves the most amazing vegetarian meal every night at his restaurant, and it's usually some variation on that. Maybe with an egg, maybe but like delicious polenta and delicious shell beans, it doesn't really get much better than that. What we have to remember is how to cook it deliciously and how to serve it with love and not think that we have to have something fancy or something fatty or some piece of meat.
What's the biggest mistake, Russ, do you think amateur cooks make in the kitchen?
Oh, I don't know. it might be in the shopping part of it. I mean, to get back to that other question, the farmer's market, the Ferry Plaza, that's a really expensive market. Yeah. There are some things you could buy there that are less expensive. You know, the Temescal market, there's a great stand, you know. But you can also go to Berkeley Bowl and you could find reasonably priced produce. Maybe you're not going to get the stuff that I would buy necessarily at the farmer's market. But
yeah.
There's good food that you could buy in this area. It's not cheap. Ultimately,
the Alamany market is also very value conscious.
Yeah, it's definitely. So just a few seconds left. Charlie, Russ, what are you guys doing for the 40th anniversary?
We're doing a dinner at Camino on Friday with all my favorite dishes from Chez Panisse, whatever those are. I can't figure that menu out yet. And then I'm going to cook with David Tanos in the downstairs restaurant on the big birthday. So I'm pretty happy about that. I like cooking in fireplaces. So.
Charlie?
We're having a dinner at Pizzaiolo where we're going to donate a certain percentage of the night's take to the Edible Schoolyard through this woman, Samin, who's kind of organizing a lot of it. And then I'm going to participate with some cooks in... There's a big party on Sunday that's kind of for all the people who put on dinners, and we're going to cook we're going to make a salad.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks to all you guys for being here and talking about Alice Waters and Chez Panisse. Charlie Halliwell from Pizzaiolo and Boot and Shoe Service in Oakland. Russ Moore from Camino Restaurant in Oakland. Also Michael Bauer from the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks to all you guys, and thanks, of course, to Alice Waters as well. Forum is produced by Kevin Gilray, Tina Lauerberg, and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Majang Rastigar, Arjun Singh, Adam Susanek, and Natalie Raffles. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.